W233AH Monticello.
From the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, it's Friday. Dan Hoost is here from Sullivan County Government. We'll have an update on the legislature meeting from yesterday, plus a POWMIA Day preview, which is today, and more information about that food scrap recycling pilot program. More people are signing up, and you can too. Rosh Hashanah is this evening, the Jewish holiday, the Jewish New Year. It holds the highest significance in Judaism. We'll speak with Rabbi Lawrence Zerler from Fallsburg to give us further insight into this religious high holy day. Plus, the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center and the Black Library present Culture Fest, 50 years of hip-hop on Sunday, and Off Peak is a new play at Shadowland Stages. We'll learn more about both, but first the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Nearly 13,000 U.S. auto workers are walking the picket lines this morning. Employees went on strike at midnight after the latest round of contract negotiations broke down between the United Auto Workers Union and the big three car makers. Mary Barra is the CEO of General Motors. She tells CNN that the two sides need to come back to the bargaining table.
We have a deal that I think is very, very important. That proposal sits at the table. Our team is ready to be at the table again. They're waiting, and we need to get back. We need the UAW leadership to get back to the table, get these issues resolved so we can get people back to work.
Union workers are demanding higher wages and future cost of living increases. Residents in eastern Libya are still combing through the rubble nearly a week after catastrophic flooding inundated parts of the North African country. Libya's Red Crescent says more than 11,000 people were killed in one city after the collapse of two dams. NPR's Aya Betraoui reports thousands of people are still missing.
Satellite images of the city of Derna before and after this past week's storm show the scale of devastation. Soccer pitches where kids once played, mosques that served the community, and entire buildings have vanished. The storm's heavy rainfall caused two dams to burst. The deputy mayor of Derna told Al Jazeera those dams hadn't been maintained in over 20 years. About a third of Derna's residents are now homeless. The UN Children's Fund says nearly 300,000 kids in Libya need urgent support. International aid is arriving, but Libya is ruled by rival governments in the east and west. That has complicated logistics and coordination. Aya Betraoui, NPR News, Dubai.
Stocks on Wall Street opened lower this morning amid news that auto manufacturing slumped last month, even before the UAW strike. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped by about 26 points in early trading.
Production of new cars and car parts fell 5% last month, even as other factories saw a jump in output. Overall, manufacturing rose 0.1% in August. Utility output rose nearly 1%. That's largely driven by hot weather, which boosts demand for air conditioning. China's industrial production picked up steam last month, an encouraging signal that the world's second largest economy may be stabilizing. Asian stocks were mixed overnight, up in Hong Kong, but down in Shanghai. European regulators are fining TikTok for failing to protect children's privacy. TikTok complains that the $368 million penalty stems from problems with the platform that are several years out of date. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR News in Washington. A state of emergency has been declared in Maine as Hurricane Lee makes its way toward New England. It's the state's first hurricane watch in 15 years. Forecasters say the storm is packing wind speeds of 85 miles per hour. A tropical storm warning has been issued for parts of Massachusetts. Voters in Nashville have overwhelmingly elected a progressive, Freddie O'Connell, as their new mayor. Alexis Marshall of member station WPLN reports on what lies ahead for O'Connell, who won with 64% of the vote in a deeply conservative state.
One of the main concerns for voters has been navigating the relationship between the city of Nashville and the Republican supermajority in the state legislature. The state house targeted the city recently, including taking over Nashville's Airport Authority Board and attempting to cut the city council size in half. O'Connell says he plans to use Nashville's position as an economic engine to revisit the city's relationship to the state from a place of power. For NPR News, I'm Alexis Marshall in Nashville.
The Writers Guild of America is set to resume contract talks with the major Hollywood studios next week. The Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers and the Guild say they're still working out the details for the next round of negotiations. Meanwhile, there are no new talks planned between the studios and actors. On Wall Street, the Dow was down 25 points. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio and seeks to help NPR be the model for high-quality journalism in the 21st century, and the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Every Friday, Dan Hoost, the communications director from Sullivan County Government, joins us, and he's here again this Friday. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
You keep coming back.
I do. It's just that you are so warm and engaging. I can't help but find myself here every Friday at 10.
Yes, that's it. but you also come to tell folks what's going on at Sullivan County Government. Yesterday, there was a legislature meeting. I guess there was some folks from the Sullivan County Drug Task Force there asking about the opioid settlement funds. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on there? There's settlement funds from the opioid lawsuits that have been dispersed throughout the country. Sullivan County got some of that.
Yep.
And the Drug Task Force is asking the legislature what?
They want the outstanding money that right now the county has, and the legislature has yet to determine what exactly they want to do with it. Some of it, my understanding, has been dispersed already, around $400,000 to law enforcement. Other parts have been earmarked for certain treatment and recovery programs. And then I think there's some outstanding monies that haven't yet been fully set on what's going to be done. And if I recall correctly, I think there'll be more money coming in the future, because not all the settlements are done with the pharmacological companies. Wow, I'm so impressed I said pharmacological. I need to give a shout out to legislator Alan Sorensen. He was one of the first that I ever heard anywhere talk about getting settlement monies from the pharmacological companies, the drug companies that created many of these highly addictive drugs. He spoke about it yesterday. I encourage people to go listen to the conversation yesterday. But just to make sure that they sort of understand that this is the Drug Task Force is full of very passionate advocates, and the legislature as well believes in what they're doing, and that they need to be funded and supported. They just had particular concerns and questions about how that money gets utilized. And of course, there are differences of opinion on how that money should be utilized.
And when they'll get it.
And I think that's what it boils down to. No one wants to see more people die of drug overdoses. We have that as the highest rate in the state. That is undeniable. I'm part of an effort that thankfully JFF is assisting us with in making sure that people understand what medication treatments are available to recover from opioid addiction and to stay on those treatments. And we have a video hopefully we'll be debuting next week with a local gentleman who goes to Catholic Charities, and their recovery program is on medication treatment, and it's changed his life completely. So it's important. This funding is not going to be sitting around forever to be used in the county's general fund. It's earmarked specifically for opioid treatment, recovery, prevention, education efforts. The question just is how exactly, when, and where. And yeah. I don't have the answer to that. I know it should be discussed, though. I'm told, and Chairman Doherty has said, He has it on for his executive committee meeting next Thursday. So I imagine this conversation will continue, and we'll see the drug task force folks there again, too.
And it's reported that the county received $1.7 million, mm-hmm. Which was then approved in the allocations last June. Mm-hmm. And that there's another $7.9 million expected, or up to. I'm not clear on that. So there definitely is a pot of money to fund these programs to fight the opioid epidemic, which, as we know, in this county, in this region, is catastrophic.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the question is, why is it taking so long?
Yeah. And I don't have an answer for that other than that there are people who are talking back and forth about, well, maybe we should do this, maybe we should do that. You know, when you get a group together of folks, it's going to be differing opinions on how to use this money. And I think everyone is very focused on the fact that once we get this money and we spend this money, there better be something to show for having done it. We can't afford to just throw money at an issue and not see a reduction in opioid overdoses and deaths and more people in treatment, because this is a crisis, an epidemic across the country right now. So this money is crucially important, and I think the legislature and the drug task force both want to make sure that it goes to the right efforts as fast as possible.
And if Chairman Doherty is bringing it up next week, maybe we'll learn more when you're back next Friday.
Yes, there'll be more to talk about, I'm sure.
In the meantime, the county clerk is launching a fraud alert. This is new information that you're bringing us right now to notify property owners of new transactions. According to the FBI, property fraud is one of the fastest growing white collar crimes. So what is this fraud alert and how can it help?
Yeah, I didn't really know much about this until this week when the clerk's office had me add a new section to their website. And it's up now where you can sign up for these fraud alerts. Evidently, I don't know how widespread it is, but folks are trying to file deeds or other documents in the clerk's office under somebody else's name. Mm. It's a real person's name, but they're not the real person. And the clerk's office is not some sort of investigative agency. They don't check anything other than to make sure that it meets state law in terms of signatures and stamps and approvals on it. And if it's got all those things that it needs by state law, these documents will get filed in the clerk's office, even if they're fraudulent. Mm. And so I haven't heard of this happening locally, but it is a free service that the clerk's office said we need to offer this to our residents and our property owners so that they can get alerts anytime something is filed in a particular name. It could be their name, could be somebody else's name. Mm-hmm. And people are like, well, wait a minute, isn't that an invasion of privacy? Why could people be saying, I want an alert for, John Doe? And they're not John Doe, but I'm John Doe. Why should they know my business? Well, these are public records. These are publicly accessible records. Anyone can look them up online or go into the clerk's office and look them up. I used to do it as a reporter when we had a lot of gas drilling leases being signed in the air. Those were public documents, and I could look that up and find out that information. But in this case, what this alert will do is actually preemptively, proactively send you an email saying, listen, this document has been filed in the name that you were interested in. If you want more information, you can look it up here.
Yeah. And according to County Clerk Russell Reeves, oftentimes this type of fraud can go undetected if a property owner doesn't periodically check the records at the clerk's office. I don't think I regularly check the records at the clerk's office.
I never did either.
I'm not sure that many people do, but this is certainly something you should pay attention to.
Yeah.
Wow. Also, the clerk recommends additional steps that owners can take. If your property is not occupied, check often to make sure it's not occupied illegally. Ask someone you trust to look after your house if you're going to be away for an extended period of time. Don't let mail pile up if you're going out of town. Make sure the assessor and tax collector offices have the correct mailing address for you. And then contact the assessor and tax collector if you suddenly stop receiving notices that you used to get, such as your tax bill, because someone fraudulently changed that information. Wow. Again, more information at sullivanny.us about that fraud alert. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Dan Hoost, as we do every Friday. He's the communications director from Sullivan County Government. Today, POWMIA Day, a remembrance today at 1. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, this is an annual observance. It doesn't have quite the same notoriety is Memorial Day and Veterans Day. But it is a specific group of veterans who some may still be alive. There are prisoners of war out there that may still be imprisoned someplace. They're certainly missing in action, especially in Vietnam. But there are people who their bodies or what remains of them have never been recovered. The story of what happened to them is not necessarily even known, but they were killed in combat. The missing in action part, or they've been imprisoned because of their association with the American military. And we want to make sure that we do not forget what they did, who they are, and at least the last information that we knew about them. The Veterans Service Agency, our office, not the Veterans Administration, this is the county's Veterans Service Agency, does a very moving ceremony every POW MIA day. They'll be doing it today at 1 o'clock in the lobby of the Government Center in Monticello. And it will all focus on the fallen comrade table. Present at every single one of these, they set this table with a white tablecloth, some plates, silverware, a candle, a flag. Every single item has a specific meaning, and they go through that meaning of each item during the ceremony. I'll be live streaming it today, so folks who can't make it but are still interested in seeing it, it'll be on our Facebook page, Sullivan County Gov, and people can take part in what is, I think, a very important ceremony to have. It breaks my heart to think that there might still be folks out there who are imprisoned, and even more breaks my heart knowing that there are families who don't know whatever happened to their loved one, that they are only listed missing in action and probably will never know anything more than that. We need to remember and gather around these folks, and that's what this ceremony is about.
That's today at 1.
1 o'clock.
And let's talk traffic. That flood mitigation project on Route 164 outside of Jeffersonville is moving along. Not quite done yet. What is it supposed to be finished?
It should be finished before Columbus Day, right That's around there. So, but it might be earlier than that. It's weather permitting. They right now are putting in the sluice that is supposed to divert the floodwaters from whatever that tributary creek is into the Calicoon Creek. I've looked on maps. I do not see a name for that creek. So if anyone knows that, let me or Tim know, because I'd like to know the name of that creek that flows into the Calicoon Creek there. But we will be creating a new creek, I guess, if you will, through this piping and sluice. So that's going in now. Please, folks, again, be patient there. We have traffic lights and flag people set up. I know we've had some issues there with folks not necessarily obeying the rules of the road there. Please, for the safety of our folks and just the residents and businesses around that area, please obey the whatever instructions or directions you're given by either a human being or a traffic light so that we can get this project done quickly and get that road back open again.
I've discovered my own detour. There is a marked detour, but I've discovered my own detour, and I found some lovely scenery along the way. So, you know, maybe there's a new thing. There's a positive side to it.
Yes, just be patient.
Just be patient.
And you might, as you said, find some new routes that are just as beautiful.
Let's talk about the senior shopping buses. Last week we talked about them getting going, and now they're up and running.
And we are getting a great response to them. We are doing different towns every day of the week. So when I say it's a five-day-a-week service, it's not a five-day-a-week service to the same township or hamlet in Sullivan County. All of them do go to Monticello, where you can spend 2 hours in Aldi's, ShopRite, Walmart, getting your needs met there. And then also, if it's along the route and it's a short stop, they'll let you go pick up your prescriptions or get something from, you know, Dollar General or something that you wanted to pick up. And then they'll take you right back to where you came from. Open to those who are 60 or older. This is for our seniors in the community, even though I'm sure there are people who are 60 or 61 saying, I'm not a senior citizen yet. So that's fine. As long as you can prove that you're 60 or over, we won't put any label to it. We'll be happy to take you on certain days to wherever you need to be along the way to Monticello.
And where can folks get more information and sign up for that?
They can find out more information through our Office for the Aging, which is available online, or they can call 807-0241.
And also the other program we've been talking about for a couple weeks now, the food scrap recycling pilot program. You've got some more signups. How many people have signed up so far?
We are right at 100, I think. And we are working hard, though, to get up to that 400 number. That's what I really want to say, of people who have signed up to be a part of this pilot food scrap recycling program so that we can prove to the state there's demand for it, because we'd like to have this facility, a compost facility in Monticello, rather than what we'll be doing for the first year at least, shipping it over to Ulster County. Our recycling coordinator, Cassie Thelman, is setting up a Zoom class where you can just get the information on the starter kit that you'll get being a sign up, she'll go over exactly what can be put in those containers and delivered to our transfer stations for free disposal. It's an exciting program, especially for those of us who are either unable or too lazy to compost.
Well, and also, a pilot program. This could, lead the way for more. So if you've signed up, tell your food scrapping friends to sign up too. Also, we want to make sure we get in, before we go, a couple of other events going on. The Country Classics Concert at the County Museum in Hurleyville. Is that this weekend? Yes.
Yeah, yes, that's this Sunday at 2:00. I know a lot of folks know Aldo and Carol Troiani, especially through this station. Yes, Little Sparrow, for those of them who might know him as the band. They run this concert series at the County Museum where they work with us over in Hurleyville. And it's just a wonderful melding of music and history. And these concerts have become very popular. They're held at the museum is the former Hurleyville school. So they're held in the gymnatorium of the museum, the old school. And then after the concert or before the concert, you can wander around the rooms and find out all sorts of fascinating history about Sullivan County. Every time I go there, and I love local history, I learn something new or I see something I haven't seen before. It's a wonderful place, and I want more people to see it. Aldo and Carol do too, and this Sunday is another opportunity.
The Office for the Aging will be closed next Wednesday, but for a really good reason.
Yes, yes. This is another one of those events I look forward to every year. Our RSVP, Retired Senior Volunteer Program, is going to be honoring all our volunteers. I think there's around 70, there might be even more than that, volunteers in the RSVP program. These are people who are retired or not retired. I think they're over 55 years of age. It's through our Office for the Aging. They have an RSVP department, a director, Kevin Salaveria, and he and his team have been working very hard to make an appreciation luncheon for the volunteers and their families. We do it every year, and we'll be doing it this Wednesday, September 20th, over at the Villa Roma. It's invitation only. I'm not putting that out there for everyone to show up. This is for the volunteers, their families, and the county officials who support them. But as a result, we have to close the Office for the Aging for that day only so that the staff have the time and ability to be there.
To honor all those folks. That's great.
Yep.
And finally, before we go, you wanted to say Happy New Year.
Yes. This is the first time I'm going to say it this way, so my apologies to those who know the Hebrew better than I do, but I believe it's Shana Tova to everyone celebrating Rosh Hashanah. That's hopefully I got that right.
I think you're pretty close. That's Dan Hoost. From Sullivan County Government, joins us every Friday. We will see you next Friday. Enjoy your weekend.
You too.
And when we come back, we'll actually learn more about Rosh Hashanah with a conversation with Rabbi Lawrence Zierler from Fallsburg about the High Holy Day, which begins tonight at sundown. This is Radio Chatsko.
Two more choices of songs about means of transport till we complete the set. So next time on the Whack a Load of Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, songs about horses and ponies. Join me, please, on Sunday afternoon at 3.
CDC recommends everyone 6 months and older get an updated COVID-19 vaccine to protect against the potentially serious outcomes of COVID-19 illness this fall and winter. To find COVID-19 vaccine locations near you, text your zip code to 438-829, call 1-800-232-0233, or go to wjffradio.org where you'll find a vaccine locator and COVID tracker. Radio Catskill, keeping you connected.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Rosh Hashanah, also known as the Jewish New Year, holds the highest significance in Judaism. It begins tonight at sundown and ends at sundown on Sunday. It literally means head of the year or first of the year, marks the third start of the Jewish High Holy Days that leads to Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio had a chance to speak with Rabbi Lawrence Zerler from Fallsburg to give us further insight into this High Holy Day.
Rosh Hashanah, the word Shana in Hebrew, has multiple meanings. It means to learn, it means to change, and it means something which is new. So the idea of review, of giving review to where you are in life and to the previous year, is central to it, and it is expressed through a service which is longer and different. So we spend a lot of time in synagogue during Rosh Hashanah, the 2 days, and on Yom Kippur, 25-hour fast. It's a time of introspection and review, but it's also a time of great hope and renewal when you look ahead to what you might be able to do differently and the opportunities that lie on the horizon await people.
Right, and this begins sunset on Friday, September 15th, this Friday, and it goes to...
It does. It's interesting. It's the weekend holiday. You know, the Jewish calendar is the lunar calendar, and each year, Rosh Hashanah will be a little bit different. It cycles back to similar days, but we have a joke in Judaism. We say that the high holidays are never on time. They're either early or they're late. This year, they're coming in the middle of September, and it's... a nice time because of the fall and the themes of the fall itself. What I would say about the Jewish calendar as well and the lunar calendar is the idea of the moon, that the moon waxes and wanes. And that has, it becomes emblematic or a metaphor for how we change in life, you know, that we might find that we move into periods of decline, but then we're able to emerge with a certain sense of renewal.
Can we talk about the significance of blowing the shofar during the Rosh Hashanah and sure. How does it connect to the holidays themes and reflection and renewal?
So the shofar is actually referred to in the Bible. It says Rosh Hashanah is not mentioned by name, but it's referred to as Yom Truah, a day of Truah. And the Truah is one of the sounds of the shofar, and it represents the cry of man. And yet we're really not sure what the cry of man, how it should be best expressed. So when we blow the shofar, which is there to awaken the people to a realization that they should repent and consider their ways, awakens you up. And in fact, we blow it for 30 days before Rosh Hashanah as a prefatory tool to get us in the groove of this act of repentance and reconsideration. But it is an actual fulfillment of a mitzvah, of a commandment to blow it at our services. We don't blow it actually on Saturday because on Saturday we're not able to carry things unless there are certain provisions that are made. So we'll only be blowing it on Sunday. So that will make it even more anticipatory, more exciting because the people will not hear it blown on both days. Right. And of course, we bring our children close, and they give them the opportunity to listen to it, and it's very exciting. It's really a highlight of the service. And it is blown. There are 30 blasts that are blown at one time. And then we have our silent devotional prayer. And during that prayer, we blow it 3 times at different points. And then we blow it 3 times at different points in the repetition of the Amidah, which is the pinnacle prayer. And after each of these sets of 9 verses, we have 10 blasts of the shofar, 30 in total. So in the silent Amidah, silent devotion, and 30 in total in the repetition. So there's a very complex way in which the shofar is used. It is a tool. I mean, you could almost say that it's part of a religious symphony.
You know, this is a an important holiday. I'm sure spent with family, spent with friends. Can you share a memory or a tradition that has special meaning for you or your family?
Sure. When I was a little boy, whenever we got to the Kaddish prayer, which is actually an introductory prayer, there are many forms of Kaddish. Kaddish means holiness, but there is a half Kaddish. There's this that is a transitory or transitional, I should say, a transitional prayer before we get to the Amidah, before we get to the silent devotion. And there are special chants for the high holidays. And whenever that chant for that prayer was said, I would always look to my father because it had a certain, it was in a major mode, but it almost sounded like a cowboy tune. It went, but I die, 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 die. And it just, it was always, I'd always look to my father because that was when I felt that I was, you know, almost getting on my, up on my religious horse, getting ready to ride through the service. So that's one very special memory that I have. You know, I've served as a rabbi and cantor for over 40 years. So I have memories of certain chants that I've been able to perfect. You know, the liturgy is very important. You can maybe improvise on other times of the year at other services on the Sabbath, but we actually have a very, if one wants to be maintained fealty to this time and to its traditions, even the melodies have to be maintained in the right form. And the melodies have been, they have been assembled over the years. There was a 15th century scholar who traveled all over Western Europe, and he created a composite of the melodies that should be said. And we have a ruling that even when one should not change custom, even when it comes to a melody. So it's maintaining these melodies in their modes so that they reflect the meanings of the words. It's important that that text not be corrupted by a melody that does not suit it.
Now, you know, you mentioned, you know, the shofar and other things that happen during the holiday, which has a lot of symbolism, a lot of, and has meaning behind it. So can you talk a little bit about, before we go, the symbolism of the apples and honey during the holiday?
Oh, yes. Yes, that's a very good question. We have actually at our table what's called the Seder Rosh Hashanah, just like we have a Passover Seder. So we have many foods that we eat. Food is social glue, but also we say Simana Milsa, that food becomes a sign of what we're trying to achieve. Food is aspirational for us. So we dip apples in honey to show that we want to have a sweet year. We eat pomegranates, which have many seeds, and they represent the multiple mitzvot, the multiple good deeds that we can do, or the commandments that we have in abundance that come to us from the Torah, from the Bible. Some people will eat the head of a fish to represent that they want their year to be like a head and not a tail. They want it to be a leader and not a laggard. So there are multiple foods that we eat as part of the Seder Rosh Hashanah at night. And we invoke certain prayers with each food to indicate what the purpose of that prayer is. Now, it's the idea of you are what you eat. And that by eating things, you actually have a tangible at your table that it takes you to where you want to, or begins to lead you towards that path that you want to be on for the new year. You know, you have people who cook certain dishes or bake. Honey cake is a popular food to eat this time of the year. It gives us sweetness. People will make something called tzimis, which is a combination. It's like a stew, and it has carrots and sweet potatoes and prunes, and it's a sweet kind of concoction. And a tzimis actually in Yiddish means when you make a mixture, when you make like something like a mess out of something. But in this case, the tzimis is that we want to really mix with everyone together and to be, so that we feel that we're not apart from each other. We're looking for nearness and dearness. It's not only God nearness and God dearness, which is something I often speak about, because God is, in a sense, more accessible to us because of how we design the calendar and the rituals of this time of year. But there's also personal nearness and dearness. It's the idea of turning back and coming back, returning to each other when there might have been a break in relationship. Mm-hmm. But I will say it's important to emphasize that at this time of the year, it's almost like the political campaign when you suddenly see the candidates or your representative spending more time in your district, being more ubiquitous and more available to you because the elections are coming about. So we have the same thing, the elections on high. God is going to elect who will live and who shall die, and he puts himself nearby. He puts himself in our, he gives us the tools to which we can feel a certain sense of intimacy. And that if we exercise that invitation to intimacy, then we hope that that will give us a proper and a positive judgment during this period, which, by the way, it is not closed till the immediately. Yom Kippur, it's sealed, but the final fate comes after the holiday of Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles, which comes on the heels of Yom Kippur. So we have, you know, it's a, we place the order, mm-hmm. we work hard, and then we have the way stations along the way until such time as we know the judgment is going to be made for us. And one of our prayers, which brings a lot of tears to people's eyes, is a prayer in which we say, who will die? Who will die by fire? Who will die by famine and by pestilence? And lest I leave out this one point, I want to say that many of our prayers, most of them are in the plural. Because when we pray for forgiveness, we pray together. And if the prayer is in the plural, then we realize that we're actually carrying each other through this process.
It's a great message and a great way to end this interview. You know, to learn, I'm learning a lot of stuff from this. You're talking to me about this. A lot of the traditions I wasn't aware of. So, Rabbi, thank you so much for joining us on the program. Let us know about this important holiday, a religious holiday that's coming up.
It's my pleasure to.
We're talking to Rabbi Lauren Sigler about Rosh Hashanah, letting us know the importance of this holiday. Thank you so much, Rabbi, for talking to us and letting us know and about the customs and traditions.
I just want to wish not only my Jewish friends, but everyone a happy and a healthy and a sweet new year. Yes. There's no shortage of opportunities that we should exploit to be able to wish each other well.
For Radio Catskill, I'm Patricio Robayo.
We'll take a short break, and when we come back, Culture Fest, celebrating 50 years of hip-hop in Hurleyville. This is Radio Catskill.
Support comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com.
Tavern on Main, a neighborhood bar and restaurant on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York, featuring local American fare, specialty cocktails, craft beers, and Sunday brunch. Menu and hours online at TavernOnMainNY.com.
And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. A party in the Bronx on August 11th, 1973 is widely considered to be the birthplace of hip-hop. The art form has since touched every corner of the world and evolved into one of the most significant cultural forces today. The Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, or HPAC, along with the Black Library in Monticello, is celebrating the 50th anniversary of hip-hop with Culture Fest, 50 Years of Hip-Hop. It's an outdoor event Sunday from 2 to 7 at Fireman's Park in Hurleyville. Patricia Rubio spoke to co-director of HPAC, Elian Hutchinson, for more details about Culture Fest, which will showcase local talent, dance performances, spoken word, artwork, and musical acts.
Yeah, we're excited about this. So this year is the 50th anniversary of hip-hop, and, you know, this is a global music genre. Mm-hmm. It's a culture. So we're excited to kind of share a lot of the local hip-hop artists who are actually in our area, which it's great to sort of support, you know, our local and kind of independent artists. So.
Absolutely. You know, you're talking about, like you said, it's a global phenomenon, really. And now you have it not only have it recognizing the importance of it, but you also bring it to a local level. You're bringing these local artists that we have here in the region and had given them exposure and celebrating what we have here locally. Is this the first time you have the Culture Fest at Hurleyville?
Yeah, this is our first Culture Fest. We will repeat it yearly with sort of different genres. And so this year we have Twin Jaws, Kamari, Cam 13, Drew Sullivan, Ice the God, Cowabunga Boys, Dolly Star. We have quite a few really amazing artists who will be performing. We like to do these. So we do in June, we do a music festival. And so this is kind of our second in the year, our second outdoor festival.
Right, right. Yeah, it seems like this particular year you've been having a lot. It's like that musical festival, then you had the Pride event,
mm-hmm.
And now you have another outdoor event happening here this month. So it's great that the Hurleyville is really involving the community that way. Well, I want to just talk about the culture of hip-hop and your thoughts on how the culture of hip-hop has evolved over the past like 5 decades, and how do you think this will be reflected in Sunday's programming?
We'll be playing some of the classic songs from the 80s. We actually have Oliver King doing a little talk about the history, as well as a large art piece that's a visual history of the hip-hop. And we also have lyrics from songs that are spoken as in spoken word. Because it's often you kind of miss the fact that it's really poetry to music, and this idea of doing poetry and writing and sort of reflecting on people's personal experiences and stuff is really the crux of hip hop. It's storytelling,
right.
And so we really wanted to include that in there. Whereas sometimes it's hard to hear what the story is if you're not kind of comfortable, kind of parsing out the pacing in some of the songs. And so I really wanted to make sure that there was a way that people really could hear kind of how kind of personal and profound a lot of the lyrics are.
Right, right. Yeah, because maybe it could be distracted by the music, it could be distracted by all the effects that are going on. And once you delve into the words, and I guess, you know, all music, all lyrics are a form of poetry. But to really hear the poetry and to really hear, I guess, the meaning and the content of what this person was performing about. I mean, I had a question about that. Like, you know, what role does spoken word have in celebration of hip hop's history? You mentioned some of that. I don't know if you want to expand more of that. And also maybe list who else is doing some spoken word. You mentioned Oliver King, who's very well known here in Sullivan Catskills, does the Frederick Douglass and also the MLK performances. But if you want to delve in a little more about how is spoken word has a role in the history of hip hop?
I think the idea of using words and sort of rhythm in order to tell a story is as old as it can get, really. And then we kind of point on like Nikki Giovanni, who did poetry to music historically, just this idea that in order to remember a storyline and to remember and to be able to repeat a way of telling, you really put it to a rhythm. And so it's so inherent to the way kind of humans remember and, you know, hear stories and plot lines.
Right, right.
So it's so foundational, I think.
And you're talking about not only performances, but you also are talking about having artwork there. And where would the artwork be displayed? Would that be displayed in the Gallery 221 or somewhere outdoors?
It'll actually be in the cinema.
Okay.
And there'll be video of some like rap battles and things in the cinema. But the artwork is by Tim Fielder, and it is a visual, basically comic book, that kind of goes through the entire history of hip hop with all of the key artists, starting, you know, of course, with DJ Herc, Kool Herc, and going all the way to contemporary time.
Right. And it's great that you are partnering with the Black Library in Monticello. Can you talk about that? Can you talk about the inspiration for this festival, and how did the collaboration between the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center and the Black Library come about?
Well, Douglas Schindler and Mike Davis, the two directors of the Black Library, are actually experts kind of on on hip hop. They are avid fans. Douglas has a artwork where he's taken the meter and the verse and sort of highlighted them out so that it creates this really kind of interesting color pattern in just the way that the song's written out. They actually did also a hip-hop presentation as part of one of their programmings back in the summer. It was a really natural collaboration. And they had a lot of recommendations on local artists as well who could perform for us.
So is this a free event? How can folks, do they need to register? Do they need to buy tickets? What can you tell us about how can people attend the Culture Fest celebrating 50 years of hip hop?
Yes, it is a free event. It is outdoors, so you just come right to Main Street, Hurleyville, right in front of the Tango Cafe, and right next to the Hurleyville Arts Center. It is a free event. We do have a recommended $10 donation. We do have raffles, and we have our wonderful sponsors, of course, as well. So Sullivan Counts Catskills Visitors Association, Bridge and Tunnel Brewery, Formaggio, the Hurleyville General Store, Bold Gold, the Tango Cafe, and of course, you guys, Radio Catskill. So it's been, it's really, truly a really community-supported event. So we're really excited to put it on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great event that the first one is happening this Sunday, the Culture Fest. 50 years of hip-hop, celebrating 50 years of hip-hop. It's happening on Sunday, September 17th, 2 to 7 p.m. in Hurleyville. Just look for the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, and you see everyone. Just follow the crowd. That's what I always say. Just follow the crowd. You get there. So, before we go, is there anything else I have not touched on that you would like folks to know about?
No, just keep an eye out on our website for all of our upcoming events. We do have our Indigenous Voices series coming in October, and we have several movies are playing, so we'll definitely keep an eye out on our website, and
awesome.
We hope to see you there.
Definitely. We're talking to the co-director of the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, Ileana Hutchison, letting us know about the Culture Fest of 50 years of hip-hop, celebrating it this Sunday at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center in Hurleyville. Thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you for having me.
For Radio Catskill, I'm Patricio Rubio.
Quick break for us, and when we come back, a new play at Shadowland Stages in Ellenville. It's opening tonight. This is Radio Catskill.
Hello, I'm Thane Peterson, host of Living Jazz. You know, jazz is a great improvised art form that started in America, spread around the world, and is still going strong. That's why every Saturday afternoon I bring you the best in current jazz. It's the newest, most interesting music you can hear anywhere. Join me for Living Jazz, noon to 2 Saturday, here on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Off Peak, a new play written by Brenda Withers and directed by Brendan Burke, starts tonight at Shadowland Stages in Ellenville and runs through October 1st. The play explores the intricate dynamics of love and memory when two former lovers unexpectedly cross paths during their evening commute. The story delves into themes of forgiveness, the act of letting go, and the transformative power of a well-timed delay. Cast member Mary McCann spoke to Patricio Rubio about the play.
Well, it's a wonderful play, and the space is really intimate. The set is fantastic. We're on a little Metro North train, and it really looks like we're on a little Metro North train. And so it's almost, sort of documentary style, I think, in the intimacy with the set and the space. And this, it's two people, so it's really intimate.
Right. Now, so let's talk more about your role. They said it's two people who've known each other for a while, separated, and now have met each other in an unexpected way, in the train station. So can you tell us more about your role in Off Peak, and what is your connection to the other actor?
Yeah, so I don't want to give away any spoilers, but
right,
my
course.
Character is heading home, and her old lover comes on the train, and she's very surprised, and they have a really unexpected kind of journey on this train ride, and while there's a delay, and my character gets to get in touch with the past that she didn't want to get in touch with, which is, how does she feel about this person who was her, I think, true love. And then also they both kind of come face to face with being honest about their lives, where they are now, what they're, you know, what they had dreamed of, what came to fruition, what didn't, and the reality of their lives today. And it's funny. So it's got a lot of stuff that's sort of surprising and moving, and also hopefully will be funny.
I mean, you know, like we all had some, I'm sure we all relate to that, you know, someone that we've known in our past and have some a strong connection and, you know, some time apart and seeing them again in public, you know, all of a sudden, I feel it would almost bring you back to that era, or that time frame a little bit in some aspect. Does your character feel that way?
Yes, they both, as they explore the, you know, and discuss the past and their relationship, I think they both really remember it in different ways. And so they're grappling with what the reality was and what their own experience of that time was. And it's unexpected. You know, one of the things that you discover in this is that she didn't necessarily want to ever see him again, and now she's facing, because she didn't, I think she was afraid of how she would feel about him. Mm. And now there she is, you know, really reliving the past with him.
Right. Now, without giving too much away, of course, the play's description mentions the echoes of long forgotten memories, and can you elaborate a little bit on that and how memory is explored in the play and how it impacts the character's journey throughout the story?
Yeah, he talks to her a lot about, I think it's fair to say, sort of regretting his behavior. And I think that she agrees that some of his behavior when they were together was, you know, not great. He was kind of not the best boyfriend, for sure. And yet, she has really fond memories of their past. So I think that as they have both relived it, they really relived it in different ways. And so this gives them an opportunity to really specifically go back and look at things and go, wait, you saw it this way. I saw it that way. I thought it was this. I don't know why you would have thought it was that.
Yeah, having these life experiences and having two viewpoints on it, and instead of experiencing the same experience, but, you know, we bring our own background, our own trauma to any situation and sort of react to that through our lived experiences. Is there any, without giving too much away, of course, are there any specific moments or scenes in Off Peak that sort of stand out as particularly thought-provoking and that may resonate with audiences?
Well, I think he's really trying hard to be a really self-evolved person, taking responsibility for himself. And the stuff that he's talking to, you know, my character about, that he thinks she will really respond to, oh, wow, you know, you're really evolved, and I wish this is the way you were when we were together back mm-hmm. then. I think she feels like this does not seem like genuine, and I'm not sure who you are in this. And so the arguments are there. It's really, I mean, it's beautiful and really, I think, relevant, because they're both kind of going, who are we today in 2022?
Right.
And they are, you know, of a certain age. They're middle aged. And so they're also coming to terms with, you know, like I said, you know, what their dreams were. She was a singer, and she's not playing out anymore. That doesn't give anything away. But this encounter makes them both really grapple with the past in ways that then makes them grapple with the present.
Right. People change.
And I think, Yeah, people change. And I think she was afraid to see him because I think she was really worried that she would fall back in love with him and not know where that would lead. Mm. And that's not a spoiler in it. I'm not sure what happens after the play ends.
Yeah, like I said, people change, and like I said, you mentioned that whether she wants to fall in love with him, and almost like going back to your old self, and she might not. I don't know about the play, but like she might not be ready to revisit that or go back to her old self, because she might be happier as her new person, as her new and starting a new life, especially in this transition part of her life. You said she's middle aged. And you know, you're coming to terms with a lot of things, you know, it getting older, you look back on your career, looking back in your life, and has it been well spent, and what things you would have changed, and also the realization that time is going away and you don't have much time on this earth to sort of, make your mark or be happy. And I can see the struggle there is when you mentioned it was, you know, I'm happy now. No, I don't know. I'm not sure if I want to go back to this because I've been hurt before and now time is short and I want to enjoy my life. But this is from what I'm just getting, just from you describing it.
Yes,
so
that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Mm. Yeah. And I think he's trying to, not to speak for Steve's character, but I think that he feels like he needs to go out and get resolution on this, based on his looking at the past and, you know, the behavior that he regrets. So yes, and I do think that she's really come to terms with, okay, this is what my life is now, and I'm living upstate, and I'm doing this, and I'm in a whole different thing, and that, you know, and I think she was, I don't think it's a spoiler to say, I think he broke her heart, and that she's worried that, it sort of is revealed that she hasn't wanted to see him because I don't think she wants to come to terms with it, the possibility of that being ignited. She wants to just stay in the life that she's in now and not have that emotionally disrupted.
The official opening night of Off Peak is happening on Saturday, September 16th at 8 p.m. And there will be an after party on the opening night performance in celebration of the Off Peak at Aroma Time in Ellenville. Before the official opening, you can catch a preview performances of Off Peak on Friday, September 15th at 8 p.m. and on Saturday, September 16th at 2 p.m. Preview tickets are available for $35 and evening shows are available at $43. And Sunday matinee performances are priced at $39. You can find information at shadowlandstages.org. Mary, before we go, is there anything you would like to mention about this play, about your character? Oh, but sort of the experience of working in a new play in upstate New York and this great, you know, new black box theater that Shadowland Stages has.
Yes, I will say this. I it's my second time working at Shadowland, and I love it. I love being up here upstate. I live in the city, and I love it up here. And the thing about this play that's, I think, will be really fun for the audience is it's a roller coaster. You know, it's two people on a train and it goes up and down and all around. And so it's a real roller coaster ride, and it's about an hour and 15 minutes. So it goes, a lot happens in a short amount of time. And like I said, I think it should be fun to watch.
Definitely, definitely. Well, we're talking to Mary McCann, one of the cast members. One of the two of the cast members for Off Peak that's opening up this weekend at Shadowland Stages. Mary, thank you so much for joining us on the program and break a leg this weekend.
Thank you.
For Radio Catskill, I'm Patricio Robayo.
And that's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. You can listen to the show at wjffradio.org. While you're there, you can get more information about our community awards coming up on September 28th. We are honoring outstanding achievements in local arts and culture. So many great organizations, and we are able to honor some of them. Go to wjffradio.org to find out more about the event. September 28th at Seminary Hill in Calicoon. I'm Tim Bruno. We'll see you at the Jeffersonville Jamboree tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from 52 and Vine, a wine and spirit shop in Jeffersonville featuring local, national, and eclectic vintners and distillers. 52andvine.com. From the Upper Delaware Welcome Center at the Narrowsburg Union, featuring information about regional attractions and activities, along with products by the region's artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen at Catskills Curated. NarrowsburgUnion.com.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. You may have heard that prices for used vehicles are up. Well, I bring this up because that car or truck you don't need anymore, it's probably worth more today as a donation than it was even a few months ago. So if you don't need it anymore, or if it's going to be too expensive to repair, why not donate it to this station? It's easy, it's free to you, and the proceeds help us bring you the news.
Donate at WJFFradio.org.
On Point is next, followed by Democracy Now! And Science Friday at 2. Today's forecast, a good deal of sunshine, high of 68. Overcast overnight, low 49. Partial clearing tomorrow after some clouds, high near 70. And then on Sunday, also cloudy, giving way to more cloudy skies and rain Sunday night, high Sunday 69. WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello. This is Radio Catskill.